Welcome to Under the Flyover, Inside Croydon's interview podcast. With the London elections just 1 month away, Stephen Downes, editor of Inside Croydon, interviews Zach Polansky, the deputy leader of the Green Party, about ULEZ, tram extensions, and asks just what does a London Assembly member do?
Hello, this is Under the Flyover from Inside Croydon. My name's Stephen Downes. We're about a month away from the London elections, and joining us for this particular interview is Zach Polansky, the deputy leader of the Green Party. Zach, hello. Delighted to have you with us.
I'm great to be here. Thanks for having me, Stephen.
You're more than welcome. Zach, I'll cut to the quick. We've noticed of late that there's a great prevalence of actors in the Green Party. How do you explain that?
When people don't put this question so politely, they say you're an actor before, that must mean you're good at lying. But actually, acting is completely the opposite. It's about authentic communication of truth. So I think it's not that surprising that lots of people who have spent years trying to communicate a message look at how urgent some of the crises in our society are right now. The climate emergency, yes, but also arguably just as important, the cost of living crisis, which is really an inequality crisis, because multimillionaires and billionaires are doing better than they ever have before, whilst other people are struggling just to heat their homes or get food on the plates. So I think when you've got the ability to communicate and you've developed that, in my case, through the theatre, then it's not surprising that people then get involved with politics later on in the line. And there's always Arnold Schwarzenegger too, not that I'm comparing myself to the muscle man.
What I had in mind, and we ought to explain for our listeners, is that the Green Party candidate in the parliamentary selection for Streatham and Croydon North is an actor. And just in the past week, we've run the story that there's an actor who appeared in some 1980s horror movies, who's the candidate for the Green Party in the upcoming Woodside by-election. So you're not alone in that respect, and certainly not within your own party.
He wasn't just involved as well. He was literally the Hellraiser, or the Chatterer, I think, was Nicholas Finch.
Indeed. Using images of him online, it becomes a bit of a nightmare, but we won't go. Now, let's talk about the London elections. Let's talk about the London Assembly. You've been a London Assembly member now for 3 years. What have you achieved?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because the London Assembly, for those who don't know, is your job is essentially to hold the mayor to account. So it's largely a scrutiny role in terms of being able to push policy. And to be fair to Sadiq Khan, which isn't always my first place to go to, but he has several times said that the Greens have shifted his position on things. And there's various things I can list in a moment where the presence of Greens in the Assembly has made a difference. He says that he sees my role as to chivvy him along, which I think is a bit patronising, but, somewhere within there lies the truth. I think one of the things I'm proudest of is passing a motion a couple of years ago around climate and ecological emergency, which means that anything that is coming through the GLA, the General London Authority, comes through the lens of that climate emergency and ecological biodiversity. But on top of that, I secured a U-turn from the mayor on a Gatwick expansion. It's clearly unbelievable that when we have a climate emergency crisis and air pollution crisis, that we consider expanding airports. But other than that, for the first time ever, the Greens recently have been chairing the Police and Crime Committee. That's the first time ever in the history of the London Assembly a Green has held that role. And my colleague Caroline Russell has been doing a lot to push the mayor on what is essentially misogynistic, racist, homophobic, systemic issues within the organisation. She's been holding the Met to account there. And then my other colleague, Sean Berry, has secured millions of pounds of funding for local youth services. These things all link, by the way, because in Croydon in particular, I've noticed a real tendency around policing, because obviously there are issues, particularly around youth violence, to move towards punishment. Whereas actually, I think the bigger piece that's often missing is, where have these young people got to go? Who are their mentors? Where are the services that they can use to keep them out of trouble? And how do you make sure there's that community support in place? So looking at prevention as a first and a priority rather than just punishment. I could list lots of other things too. I don't know if you want me to keep going or if that actually becomes quite
Well,
boring.
you can keep going and see how quickly you exhaust your list.
I'd say one of my proudest ones that's quite niche, but it links back to being an actor, is just 2 months ago, I hosted the first ever theatre production inside City Hall. So we had an actor from every single London borough, so representing the 32 boroughs plus the City of London. And a London playwright, Ricky Beadle Blair, wrote a play about issues that are happening in London, all about environmental, social, racial, and economic justice, which are very much the themes of the Green Party. So he wrote a play about that, put it on in City Hall. That was amazing in itself because it just felt like the space was really vibrant with diversity and voices of London. But then I took a motion to the Assembly to propose that actually future mayors do this every year. So they commission a London playwright and they put on a play in London City Hall that reflects the time and reflects London. And I was really pleased that despite Labour trying to stop it, it was voted through by the other parties. So that is now there as a recommendation for any future mayor, which I think is pretty cool.
What did Labour do? Why did Labour do? What did Labour do to stop it?
And so they voted against it. Their argument at the time, well, they made two arguments. One was less flattering to me, but they said that the only theatrics that should happen in City Hall Chamber are my speeches. So, I'll take that on the chin and keep advocating for people. But the more serious reason is they said that London's, I mean, it's hard making this argument for them because it's so ludicrous, but they said London's West End needed support, and that's ultimately where the mayor's support should be going. And I made the argument these two things are absolutely not opposed. You can support London's West End, but I'd argue even more than the West End, support London's independent, smaller grassroots venues and make sure, they've had a real hit. They're already struggling, but through the pandemic, London's venues have really, really struggled. And it's not lost on me that you've got Fairfield Halls inside Croydon. So the argument wasn't to replace all of that work and just put it on in City Hall. The argument was to open up City Hall, which is a place that I imagine most people listening to this have never visited. In fact, most people probably don't even know it's in Newham now. So we've moved from South London near the London Bridge to Newham. And, I'm not necessarily against that. I think it's good to kind of move the centre of London's government to somewhere less touristy. But I think if you're going to do that, you then need to open up those doors to make sure that most Londoners know where City Hall is, know that it's open to the public and they can visit almost at any time. And then on top of that, when they do visit, there's something there and a reason for them to go. So I call this opening up City Hall, and it's been a long strand of my work is looking, how do we reconnect grassroots communities with the seat of power and make sure that people feel included in that conversation?
Thank you. Thank you. Is City Hall, is the London Assembly an unnecessary to a local government, do you think?
No, I think it's really vital. You'd expect me to say that, having been a London Assembly member, but I do think
Well,
when
Nigel Farage stayed in the European Parliament for years and he was constantly trying to extricate himself or get the place closed down. So it's not necessarily a
No, that's a fair point. And we've got parliamentarians in the House of Lords. Natalie Bennett, on her first day, rocked up to the reception and said, "How do I abolish my own job?" So I take the point that sometimes people can serve institutions and not agree with them. I think, politics is clearly broken. We've got a Conservative Party and a Labour Party that I would argue are often in the same place with things, where they don't recognise the urgency of the crises that are facing us, and their solutions are often very similar. That's yes at a national level, but I would also argue in London too. There's been various places where the current mayor just has not moved far enough, and our candidate for mayor, Zoe Garbutt, is offering real solutions around affordability. But the reason why we need the London Assembly is whoever the future mayor is, and I hope it's a Green mayor, or in future it'll be a Green mayor, they need to be scrutinised. And I think we need more transparency and scrutiny in our politics, not less. And I think when you compare London to somewhere like Manchester with Andy Burnham has a ludicrous amount of power. Now, I say that with caution because there's a real issue in this country that power more generally is very, very centralized. We have the most centralized government in Western Europe, and far too much of that lays in Westminster. So to have devolved powers to mayors is a good thing. And I think they should have more powers, not necessarily more cash, although that would be good. But I'm always arguing for more powers to generate their own cash. But the idea then that those things would continue, but you wouldn't have scrutiny bodies in place, I think is a road down the politics that we don't want to move towards. So very strong advocate of the London Assembly and its real importance in regional government. And I think it works when it does work with local government too, to make sure ultimately that, it's not scolding local government, that's not its place, but where local councils do have best practice, that they're able to demonstrate that as a best model of best practice and say to other councils, you're having a problem with this, have a look at this council and how they're doing it. And I think that kind of collegiate cooperative working is really beneficial. And then just I'm giving a long answer. My second kind of much shorter answer is that we have proportional representation at the London Assembly. So I experience from a day-to-day basis what a difference this makes to politics. I have to sit with Lib Dem colleagues, Labour colleagues, and Conservative colleagues. And rather than just getting my own way or they getting their own way, we have to work together collegiately and find compromise. And I don't think compromise should be a dirty word. I think often what results is more reflective of what people voted for. And I think to have an assembly in London doing that work is something, we can be proud of, and that should happen across the whole country.
I mean, you raise I think a very important point about this particular election on May the 2nd, because it's the first time in the history of the London Assembly and the London Mayor where a tier of proportional representation has been stripped away. And there's a lot of concern. You see it from officials that there's going to be also over voter registration, over voter photo ID. And how many members of the electorate will be denied the vote on May the 2nd just because they don't know that they've got to turn up at the polling stations carrying valid, what is determined to be valid, voter ID. I mean, do you think it was a retrograde step to take away the transferable voting system for the vote for the mayor?
Yes, undoubtedly. All of this is pretty galling and representative of the state that democracy is both in this country and in London. So if I start with photo ID, this isn't even a disguise. Jacob Rees-Mogg literally said that it backfired at them at the last local elections when lots of older people didn't bring their photo ID. And just the fact he said the quiet bit out loud suggested they were thinking about demographics of people and how could they engineer their vote to make it work better. And they made a miscalculation at that time that insisting on photo ID would help the Conservative Party and not hinder them. This is the
I mean,
first
just to
election.
explain, I could turn up at the polling station on May the 2nd with my bus pass, and that would be accepted as photo ID. If an 18-year-old turned up with their student bus pass, that wouldn't be accepted.
Absolutely. And you make the point really well. And I would just say this isn't in justification of it, more just if anyone's listening to this and is worried that they don't have photo ID and it's too late, you can apply to the council for a voter. I think it's called voter authority something, but it'll be on the council website. Make sure you bring photo ID. And if you don't have photo ID, don't let them block your right to vote, whoever you're voting for. It's really important that people turn up and vote. On the voting system itself, this is the first time I believe anywhere in the world that anyone has gone to a more progressive voting system that represents people better and then gone back to first past the post. It's always important to remind that in Europe, there are only two countries that use first past the post. It's us and Belarus, which is literally a corrupt dictatorship. And we seem to, I sometimes worry, be going, down that route. This all being said, it is important to say that even under first past the post, Greens have demonstrated across the country that we can and do win. In fact, we've quadrupled our number of councillors over the last 4 years. And at the London Assembly, we are the third party. In fact, we're in front of the Liberal Democrats. There was a poll out just a few hours ago that showed Sadiq Khan is 13% points ahead of Susan Hall. You do not need to worry about the Conservatives winning at this election. You can vote both with your head and your heart, particularly on that orange ballot, where proportional representation means that Greens can and do win. But ultimately, if the Labour Party, the Labour Party have spent a lot of this campaign arguing not for why you should vote for them, but why you need to stop the Conservatives. And I think that will annoy Londoners. I think they want to see a positive vision of why you're putting forward your front foot. And if Sadiq Khan, after 2 terms now, heading for a third term, can't find positive reasons to vote for the Labour Party, then I really think it is time to give someone else a go. And on that, I'm really proud that Zoe is putting forward things like more affordable transport, rent controls on housing, particularly for renters who are really struggling, and also universal free school meals, not just for primary school students, but to increase that to secondary school students too. I think these are things that people can get behind. They're positive messages that aren't about other parties. And yes, I hope people will turn out and vote Green on Thursday, 2nd of May. Sorry, I turned into an election broadcast
Yeah,
there, and
well,
I
yeah, I was just going to
didn't
pull you up on that because, in fairness to Sadiq Khan, he's not the only one that struggles to find something positive to say about the Labour Party. But moving swiftly,
to.
Moving swiftly on. So the first past the post we touched on. I mean, Zach, can you tell us, obviously inside Croydon, under the flyover, our listenership is predominantly in Croydon. There may well be some people in Sutton and a few in Bromley. But can you tell us a little bit of what your party's candidates are coming up on May the 2nd in terms of the London elections and Croydon, Sutton, and so on and so forth?
I'm sorry, I missed for it glitched a little bit. Did you say
Sorry.
who they are or what they
Well,
are?
can you tell us about them? Yeah, so who they are and what you know about them.
Yeah, absolutely. I should also say that I met a young autistic person the other day who has two obsessions, and they're not from London, but one is Toad from Mario Kart, and the other is the London Borough of Croydon. So, Croydon is getting its moment. So Peter Underwood is standing for the Sutton and Croydon constituency. I think those who follow politics around London will be familiar with Peter. If you're not, he works around trees. He's got that strong environmental kind of credentials in the core work that he does. But as well as that, I'd say the thing that really strikes me about Peter is his commitment to social justice. So wrapped up in all of the environmental work is a real dedication to holding the powerful and the ultra wealthy to account. And in fact, I know inside Croydon just promoted the petition around Mayor Perry's what should I call them, escapades around the golf course and the green spaces. And I was really proud that Peter led with running a petition, but I'm even prouder of Croydon residents essentially who said not on our watch. And it's good to see that Mayor Perry has reversed like a ferret, it seems. But the kind of politics of it aside, this protecting of green spaces is really important. There's a huge amount of work around the disproportionality between ethnic minority communities and working class communities who don't have access to green spaces. And the idea that the little green spaces that we do have and that you do have in Croydon could be given over to golf courses is pretty galling. And the fact that that was even on the mayor's radar, this is allegedly, I know we don't have the proof that he was going to do this, but the fact that there was even having meetings that, seem to have been
Well,
forgotten about and now remembered is pretty grim.
to put it on the record, Mayor Perry has said that he would never allow any greenbelt land, public open space, to be transferred to a private golf club. Against in terms of the evidence around that, he held two meetings last year, including visiting the golf club. In August, which he's admitted to, and the golf club started producing colour brochures to convince the local residents' associations of what their plans were after having been advised to do so by Croydon Council. So those are the facts as we know them, including the facts presented by Mayor Perry, and you can draw your own conclusions from that.
Yeah, and sorry, I guess for light as well, talking about candidates is many of you listening will know that we have Ria and Esther on Croydon Council, the first time that there's been Greens on the council. As deputy leader of the National Party, we have over 750 councillors, and I'm proud of so many of them. I'm not meant to have favourites, but I think Ria and Esther in particular are just doing phenomenal work where they've got to that council. The climate emergency is an obvious place where Croydon declared a climate emergency, but then seemed to be doing very little. It didn't seem much of an emergency. And Rhea was talking to me earlier today, actually, about how much work she's been doing in pushing, yes, behind the scenes in terms of getting that work done, but also making sure that it's really clear that, people in Croydon want to see change and they want to know that Croydon is doing their bit. But also on lots of other issues as well, defending the rights of LGBT people, renters. I know there's been a real issue with Regina Road and the mold and the damp there. And I just think, people know the Green Party care about the environment. That's obvious. But I think what they don't necessarily know, and we've been making sure we've been getting out there, is the amount of work the councils are doing on these real kind of core social justice issues. And issues, frankly, that I think a few years ago you would have expected the Labour Party to care about and to be all over, but both nationally and it seems locally, seem to be abandoning more and more, and that's where the Green Party are willing to step up. And I'm really proud of the work that Green representatives are doing.
What would you say, come well, it'd be May the 4th or May the 5th, won't you, when they declare the results from the London elections? What would you say would be a target for a breakthrough figure for the Greens in the London elections, Zach?
Yeah, so at the last election when I was elected, that was a breakthrough. We had the best result that we've ever had, including electing myself as the third assembly member. So I guess the political answer would be more. I just want to see more support grow. I guess if I'm being less guarded, then getting a fourth assembly member would be a huge achievement. I think it would make a real difference. I think you'd have to ask them, but I think I would be so bold as to say if you asked assembly members from the other parties, do we punch above our weight in the assembly? They would recognize we really do. There's lots of time, as I've said before, where we've pushed the mayor into different positions and we've led on different initiatives on the assembly. Another example I'd give is my colleague Caroline Russell has done an immense amount of work around public toilets. People often associate public toilets with older people needing them, and that's true, but actually people with long-term health conditions or just people who have left the house and don't want to be on what she terms as a loo leash, where you worry about, how long can you be out and about before you need the toilet. Yes, you can go and use a cafe or a restaurant, but there's a certain class to that because either you have to be wealthy enough to pay a drink or confident enough to be able to walk in and ask to use the toilets. So anyway, sorry. We've shown the difference through assembly members, and I think getting that fourth assembly member, who incidentally would be Zoe Garbutt, who's running for mayor, would make a real difference. That would again be a record result in London, and I think would continue to show is growing. There's places like Mid Suffolk where we've just taken an outright majority for the first time at the last election, so we're now running that council, which again was a record first. And in Bristol on May 2nd, as well as the election in London, it looks like we will come out as the largest party too, although we're not being complacent and
I mean,
fighting.
that's quite a tough battleground, isn't it, for you in Bristol? I mean, that you referred to the latest polling. It was done by or published by Redfield and Wilton today. It was a poll conducted over the 6th to the 8th of April, I think. And as you say, Sadiq Khan and Labour, and we're polling at 43%, which is down on what Labour has been polling nationally. Susan Hall of the Conservatives was polling at 30%, which again is better than the Tories have been doing nationally. And the Greens were third on 10%, which may or may not be your breakthrough figure, and you probably, obviously you always be wanting more. Why do you think Susan Hall is polling better than her national Tory colleagues in London?
That's such a horrible question, Stephen. I have no idea how to answer it.
All
I
right,
guess.
let's just say you, Liz, then, shall we, and go on with it.
I don't know though. I feel like you, Les, has been like the dog that hasn't bitten. I think that, for a long time, without a doubt, there was mass media interest. I myself was all over the media defending it. I went on Radio 5, it was meant to be for 5 minutes, and then the producer said, "Oh, can you stay on for an hour?" And I took, callers. I listened to callers and they were undoubtedly very angry and very upset. So I'm not saying for a second that you led was not a hot topic. But I think very quickly people have realized, oh, this doesn't actually affect me. It doesn't affect anyone I know. 9 out of 10 cars were already compliant. And where there's been those edge cases, there's been money for scrappage. Should there have been more money for scrappage? Absolutely. Should it have been done in inner and outer London at the same time with better communications? Yes, absolutely. But I think this idea that you led is going to dominate this election, I think just no matter how much the Conservatives and particularly the right-wing media pushed it, I think that never really transpired. It does come back to the question, though, why is Susan Hall doing better than they're doing nationally? But I guess, if your bar is Rishi Sunak, that's a pretty low bar to start off with. And I do think Sadiq's just not been running a kind of inspiring, hopeful campaign. I think it's been a campaign that's largely been focused on Susan Hall. And I think the narrowing of the gap might reflect that people are looking for hope, they're looking for a future, and they're looking for change. I do just want to say, though, despite the gap narrowing, I'm sure Sadiq Khan will spend the whole next week talking about how close it is. 13 points is not close. And in fact, that would be a bigger majority than Boris Johnson beat Jeremy Corbyn, for instance. Like, this is a pretty huge gap. So I think it points to the weakness of the Conservatives nationally, although Susan is doing better, I accept that. But I think it also points to the fact that people are frequently starting to reject those two old parties and look for something different.
Do you want to talk about the essential dishonesty, if you like, that it's not often spoken about, but this idea of trying to squeeze the third party, squeeze the third and fourth party for their votes, and what is the electability really like for the Green Party in 2024?
Yeah, I think it's really grim and it is dishonesty. I think that's the right way to put it. I've really noticed at Hustings this time around, many people know that Sadiq Khan has not yet done the Hustings. I don't think Susan Hall has either. And so assembly members have been sent in their replacement with scripts to talk about. And at the very first hustings, which was Age UK, the Labour assembly member, I'll not name and shame, but she just read out this script. And the script talked about, only Labour and Conservatives can win here. And I'm not going to repeat their messages too much. And it started to get booed and heckled. And I think we've reached a point actually where Londoners have seen through that trick. And they've seen actually that other parties can win and do win and they win seats. And they've seen that nationally and locally. And I think the idea of being told that you can't use your vote and that you're disempowered is not quite the attractive, positive message that Labour and Conservatives think it is. So I think, one, that's a huge issue. And I think people are wisening up to that. And I think the second thing is, people care about policies. I think they want to know what you stand for. And I think, again, this election, I can say clearly that the Green Party, we've stood for things like an ambition to have a flat fare across London, so to lose the zonal system and actually make sure that transport is fair so people can get around on one fee. We're advocating for a universal basic income, so to pilot that idea that unconditionally people would get money that would be balanced with a universal credit system, so no one is worse off, but actually it just gives people dignity, so they've got a home above, a roof above their head and food on their table. This isn't some pipe dream. It's been done in Wales. They're running a pilot there, and also in Finchley they're running a micro pilot at the moment. And then also I mentioned preschool meals, talking about 10 new parks. There's lots of these kind of pledges that I think people can get behind, and there's something tangible there. I think for the other parties to spend their campaign talking about the fear of the other parties, is it dishonest? I think there's a dishonest to it, but even being, more generous than that, if you're not saying it's dishonest, it's uninspiring.
Well, it's political game play, which,
Right.
in its it almost in essence, it becomes that you have to question the
And
honesty
by the way,
of
I think if the Conservative or Labour Party were advocating for proportional representation nationally and they wanted to get out to a fairer voting system, I would have a little bit more space for them saying, oh, the voting system means that you have to. But the fact that they're both defending the broken voting system and then looking to politically gameplay it is, it's pretty contemptuous.
Just you mentioned transport policy and such like, and I noticed that the Lib Dem candidate, who no one's ever heard of, came out this week and said he wouldn't go along with a fare freeze on TfL transport, tubes, trains, buses, and of course the Croydon trams. What's the Green Party policy if Zoe Garbutt was to be mayor on May the 4th, May the 5th? Would she still have a fare freeze?
Yeah, so the fare freeze, I think, isn't the answer in and of itself. I think it's you need to look much more holistically. But yes, we'd support a fare freeze, initially. But the biggest problem we have in London right now is it is cheaper in terms of transport. It is cheaper for you to drive your private car often than it is to get on public transport. And in fact, I was in Sutton last weekend. And experienced, when you don't have the tube and when you're using the overgrounds, when you're using the buses, yes, the Superloop has improved things, but there's still lots of areas around Croydon and Sutton that just the connectivity is pretty awful. And you're spending money to be able to get multiple connections. So, one, you've not been given the proper or the best public transport in the first place. And two, you are then effectively being penalised for having to use those extra transport modes. Whereas I can understand why people then go, well, it's much easier to get in my car and travel 10 minutes and pay less. So the biggest thing we're advocating for actually is beyond the ultra low emission zone is road user charging. This would mean that each single car would be charged based on the type of vehicle it is, the type of emissions, the time of day, the roads it's using. And this is a much more fair principle of the polluter pays. Ultimately, you make sure that it is more expensive to use your private vehicle, and you use the money that you're raising from that revenue to put into public transport. Ultimately, we do need to be extending tube lines. We need to be making sure that there is better connectivity. And I think Croydon, of all the boroughs I could speak to, I would say this is a real issue in Croydon around connectivity. And of course, there's the tram line too, but again, that needs the proper investment that it needs.
Well, I was seeking an under the flyover exclusive here, Zach. I was hoping to get a Green Party pledge that the long delayed, long awaited extensions of the Croydon tram link, either to Crystal Palace or to Sutton, or even better, both, will be something that the Green Party would bring in if they got our vote on May the 2nd. Are you going to give that to us?
Yeah, I'm going to make you sad. I don't think it's exclusive. I'm pretty sure that Zoe said this already, and Sean Berry, in fact, even just a few years ago, will have said this in her campaign. But absolutely, I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise that with the Party of Public Transport, we want to extend public transport. We want to invest in it. Yes, we want that money from national government. But if we're not getting that money from national government, again, a road user charging scheme to generate the cash to then put into public transport, like a tram extension, like the underground extension, is exactly where we need to go. And also, by the way, again, in Croydon, you'll have had experience with the tram. The tram is brilliant when it's going from where you need to go to where you need to go, and that's why we need more accessibility, not less.
Thank you. Okay. Let's just wrap up now because we've been talking for close to half an hour as it is. But I'm just interested in your reflections on how the campaign has gone so far, bear in mind it's only really just started. But are you at all concerned? Are you at all wary that the Green Party, you, Zoe, Peter Underwood, are not getting their fair share of airtime or media coverage? I'm thinking, well above my pay grade, but we're talking about local regional London BBC television, ITV. Are you getting access to be an invited onto these programs? There was always this comparison done with Question Time, wasn't there, in terms of how often Caroline Lucas had managed to appear on the program compared to one or two other characters who perhaps we don't really want to talk about. How's the coverage going for you? Are you getting a fair crack of the opportunity to get your message out there?
Well, there's a couple of answers there. So normally outside of election time, we absolutely do not get the airtime that we deserve. Partly we need to do something about that. So, anyone who follows me on social media will see how much time I spend doing podcasts like this, going out to grassroots organizations, whether it's Navarra Media, Owen Jones. Yes, we do the mainstream media as well, but ultimately we know that it's very often in their interest to just tell the Labour and Conservative story, because very often those media organizations are funded by the same people who are donating, particularly to the Conservative Party, but increasingly to the Labour Party. So social media is changing that. And in fact, I'm always struck by, I think it was Navarra Media said recently, that they have more viewers than Channel 4 News has of an evening. I like Channel 4 News, so I'm not kind of having a swipe at them. But again, I think it's just very clear to anyone who pays attention to politics that the amount of attention, for instance, that Reform get, despite having, I think, eight councillors in the whole country compared to our 750, is so massively incoherent. And so we do call that out. That being said, we're now in an election period where there is a legal commitment on particularly the BBC to provide balance, so they have to give equal share to all politicians. And we always notice whenever we get this balance, our polling numbers do go up, our voting figures go up, our joins go up, because it's finally we're getting the airtime, the platform to be able to speak. And I think it's really clear when people hear and see from Greens, particularly elected Greens, they want more elected Greens. And so to come back to the first question that you asked me just now, I'm very hopeful. I'm really, really enjoying the campaign. Am I wary? I'm always wary because I'm not going to take a single vote complacently, and I will be out there as I will have been for the last few months, but also for the next 3 weeks, knocking on doors, speaking to Londoners, and essentially campaigning for every single vote. In that same breath, though, I am really hopeful. As I said, we got the best result ever. I think since then, others will mark our homework, but I think we've done really clear, good work. I think that work's been respected. I think we've had more media time than we've ever had before, although we still do need more. I think there's a clear record of success. And I think Zoe is standing on this very clear platform. She's doing brilliantly herself, speaking on the media and being really clear and communicating about the things that we care about, that we know Londoners care about. So, yes, I'm hopeful and I'm not complacent. People need to vote Green on Thursday, the 2nd of May.
Zach Polanski, Deputy Leader of the Green Party, you've been under the flyover. Hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Thank you.
This has been Under the Flyover from Inside Croydon. Inside Croydon subscribers get access to podcasts like this and lots more premium content. Just sign up on the Inside Croydon page on Patreon or find us on Spotify. Thanks for listening.